From health and wellness to education,
we need to be thinking about what it takes for students to succeed.
From art and politics to social issues of the day,
we have young Black males who are thriving in their communities and who are being shown as leaders.
The journey is what matters.
I would say to all of us, we can be better than we are.
Let's join Dr. Wayne A.I. Frederick, president of Howard University, and his guests as they take steps on the journey.
From pre-K to postdoc, she's a leading voice in helping to address the barriers to achievement between minority youth and their peers. Hello, I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick, and our conversation today on The Journey is with Dr. Leslie Fenwick. She is the Dean of the School of Education here at Howard University. Welcome.
Thank you, President Frederick.
Now, you obviously have a background steeped in education, but that obviously started somewhere, and that seed was planted exactly where?
I would say it was planted in my home, where I grew up with my parents and my four brothers. My parents are still my idols. My dad started out as a graduate of Minor Teachers College. My mom and her sisters are graduates of Friedman School of Nursing. And so though they were here on the same campus, they didn't meet one another until they had graduated from these Howard affiliated institutions. My dad was working as a science teacher in DC public schools, had been a teacher of the year. My mom, a public health nurse who also did a stint at the Washington Hospital Center. And later, after they met and I was born, my dad decided to pursue a career as a dentist and then moved to New York City when my dad did a residency in oral maxillofacial surgery at the former Sydenham Hospital there. And from there, moved to Toledo, Ohio, which is where I grew up and where I really call home. Though I was born here in Washington, D.C. at Providence Hospital, Toledo, Ohio is home.
So clearly a history definitely steeped in education as a background. With that in mind, as you tackle the multitude of problems that exist in our educational system today, where are your areas of focus? And where do you see the problems and the opportunities for solutions?
One is about Black male achievement. I think there's so much in the research and media commentary that tends to be a litany of negativity about the African-American male community. So I grew up in a household with a dad and four brothers, and the images that are presented on television, on the radio, even in research and just general social commentary, don't reflect the African-American men that I know. When I became dean at Howard University, I assembled all the African-American males in my building, whether they were undergraduate or graduate students or professors. And I remember regretting that we did not videotape this event. We had men in the room from the age of 17 to 76. And we went around the table. I asked each of the men to briefly tell their story about how they arrived at Howard University. And I heard a variety of stories, stories of men who were men of privilege. Generations of their family had attended Howard or Fisk or Hampton or any other fine institution. I heard stories of men who escaped poverty and impoverished neighborhoods. And these men, some were teachers and professors, former superintendents, some were first-generation college attendees, some were following in the footsteps of fathers, uncles, mothers, and aunts. And their stories were stories of resilience, stories that indicated specific strategies for how they engaged the world and made a difference in the world at whatever age they were. And I mentioned to the men assembled that since the nation was engaged in this conversation about African-American male achievement, we needed that conversation to focus on them. These men who had successfully engaged the economy, their education, professional goals, because the strategies that they used are illustrative and helpful to another generation of men and young women. This focus on pathology has not helped our community. I don't think we should ignore the problem, but we can't solve the problem by continuing to idolize the problem. We need to study success stories and extrapolate from those success stories what's working. The second is school finance and funding, how we get money to schools that serve all children, but particularly poor and Black and brown children. school finances, nobody wants to talk about funding formula. It's not a sexy topic, but it's how we get money to our schools and how we can eradicate education disparities and inequities. And the third would be something that I love talking about and have had the option, the opportunity to do this on Capitol Hill, teacher quality. Too many children who are Black, brown, and poor don't have certified teachers. And we as a nation should be ashamed of that. And we need to do more to make sure more children have access to certified teachers.
You're listening to The Journey. My guest today is Dr. Leslie Fenwick, Dean of the School of Education here at Howard University. I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick. Now, to expand on where we are in terms of our education system, I had the opportunity to co-chair the Education Committee of the Transition for Mayor-elect Bowser. And I learned a lot about the D.C. school system. I learned a lot about chartered schools. I learned a lot about the opportunities in adult education and higher education. And as you mentioned in your second and third point, in terms of quality of teaching as your third point, and in your second point of area of focus in terms of funding, specifically today, when we look at the education, I would say the quality measurements or assessment of teachers, where do you think there are fundamental weaknesses and potentially opportunities for to have a more robust system that makes sense, you know, to be applied more widely?
I think that districts can do more work to incentivize their top teachers serving in the neediest school contexts. So I would like to see districts doing more of that, creating policies and other incentives to get our top teachers to serve in the neediest context. The second thing I would like to see nationally is for HBCUs to be used as part of the solution to urban education problems. Historically, Black colleges and universities, even right now, almost two decades into a new millennium, produce 50% of the nation's African-American teachers. Mm. So if HBCUs closed, half the nation's African-American teachers would be gone. And our students, those who attend HBCUs, tend to want to serve in urban schools and tend to stay in those schools as the minority population of students increases. So they have a calling to serve in these settings and a desire to stay in the settings. And I think districts working with HBCUs can realize some of their goals about having a quality teaching force.
Now, you've served in many different capacities and certainly have been prolific in terms of scholarship around the issues that we've been discussing today. On a personal note, when you look at leadership in terms of schools of education around the country, there clearly is a lack of gender equity. What are your thoughts about that and how we should address that in our higher education systems?
You know, we in schools of education can start to forget these issues around gender equity, since we tend to serve in a female-dominated profession. But the shadings of those gender inequities are apparent when we start to look at leadership. So though the majority of teachers are female, when you look at the ranks of principals and superintendents, fewer females in those ranks. Same is true of the professorate in schools of education, well represented in terms of females, fewer female deans. I think one of the great things about being at an HBCU is that we have these models of intellectual authority and leadership. So normally if we said to someone on the street, close your eyes and picture a dean, close your eyes and picture a president, they're not going to picture either of us, President Frederick. They're not going to picture, you know, a young 40-something Caribbean American male. They're not going to picture, you know, I won't say my age, but younger, not younger than you, but younger African American female.
African-American female
But my point is that we have these kind of racialized and genderized notions of who leads. And when you step on the campus of a Black college, all of those notions, or many of those notions, I should say, are shattered when you walk in a classroom and see that physics professor who may be Liberian-American. You walk in a classroom and see an English professor who's an African-American female. You walk across campus and see the president who's a Caribbean-American male, or a dean who's an African-American female.
Now, with the changing landscape and the demographic change in our education system as well, in terms of who the pupils are, where do you see the principles of pedagogy fitting in, and how do we infuse those? And I specifically am trying to raise the issue of, because we were taught it, we should teach it.
Yeah.
And that probably needs to go away out of our system. But how do we bring more robust pedagogy to the forefront?
The new student, whether they're a K-12 student or a higher education student, whether they're low SES or high SES, they're deeply steeped in technology. Now, most of them are consumers of technology. So if we talk about new pedagogical models, we really need to be looking, I think, at how we can use technology better as a teaching tool. And these technologies are not just certainly computers or the internet. It's where the younger students are. These cyber spaces that they've created to interact with one another, and social media. How do we engage social media and even, telephones in the classroom? I think we're going to see more work around that. I think that we might ultimately see what I'm calling potpourri degrees, meaning maybe the expert on early childhood education is at Stanford. I've enrolled at Howard University to get a bachelor's degree in elementary ed, but I might take a course from a faculty member at Stanford, a faculty member at Yale, three faculty members at Howard, and a faculty member at Clark Atlanta University, for instance, and that would comprise my degree. I'm interested in seeing how technology is going to press the notion that we have to complete all coursework at one institution. Will we begin to see potpourri degrees? But I do think the new generation of students, they're using technology in all kinds of ways. Education is social. And I think we may find some innovations that engage the technologies.
You raise a very interesting concept, because especially in school districts where we have an uneven distribution of resources, certainly technology can help level that playing field in much the same way you just described.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you serve on many boards and on many councils advising. The two that I'm particularly interested in that I'd like you to give us a little bit of input on as we begin to close. One is, you're on the Scholarly Advisory Council for the Smithsonian National Museum of African American History and Culture.
I'm a relatively new member of that council, which was established by the noted historian John Hope Franklin. It's a gift to serve on this council, which has set the intellectual agenda for the museum. Most of the experts that sit on the council are art historians, African-American historians, historians generally, museumists, and I serve as the resident education expert. The mission of the museum is outreach to children and schools, teachers. And our deliberations have centered around what we want the public, whether that public is a domestic public of citizens or all the international folk who travel to the United States, what we want them to know about the broad swath of African-American history in this country. And the ribbon will be cut in 2016.
And the second one I'm curious about is the National Advisory Council for the George Lucas Education Foundation.
Yes, Edutopia is really engaged in crafting a new school reality, linking technology, education, pushing new pedagogies, as you mentioned, new ways of thinking about teaching and learning. And so as a member of their National Advisory Committee, every now and then the group of us is tapped to weigh in on our thinking about how to better prepare teachers, how to make classrooms more exciting for children.
Thanks for being here. My guest today has been Dr. Leslie Fenwick. She is the Dean of the School of Education here at Howard University. I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick. Please join me next time on The Journey.
You've been listening to The Journey with Dr. Wayne A.I. Frederick, right here on the Howard University Radio Network.